just a nod. That's what you tell them. And Dad, what you think about them fighting socialists? They crazy than hell. They never would be no socialists. You don't need them kind of, we don't need them kind of bastards in here.
She changed since you saw her last Saturday, the newcomers. She didn't even get wound up. She'd throw you a few fuck yous, too, if you keep her going. She used to be holding this. Yes, true. All right, I think we've covered the reasonable amount of territory. We've lived and we have learned, and we've had the nation maybe rise and fall. And if socialism goes down, we can make an issue here, and Indians over in the East are in revolutionary ferment anyway, and the Soviet Union has said, amalgamate your government. We've got a cause. We found that cause, celebrity, we can fight for. Oh, history can be made on your shoulders. And I think you'll probably get a chance to live. Some of you are the most disappointed about that. What some of you want to do is to live guaranteed that you're going to be able to die when you want to at 68 without any trouble. And life isn't like that. I don't know why you want guarantees like that here when, honey, you didn't know when you drove down the street somebody going to run over your ass in San Francisco. My son behind me, they tried to shoot him one day on the street. Another one tried to knife him. You just walk down the goddamn street, they did that to you. You could have been in that mob Monday. You could have been there when they were bashing heads up against it. It could have been yours. So I don't think you can't. Let's not be idle dreamers, for Christ's sakes. Patrice Lumumba drugged to death and would not recant, and they had to drag him for 15 miles before he died. Che Guevara tortured for hours and hours in Bolivia. And could have lived in the plush circumstances of leadership in Cuba. But he left the leadership of Cuba to fight in the mountains of Bolivia, and people weren't even grateful enough to help him. Piss on it! What you got reason to complain? Malcolm shot down in front of his children. Edgar Evers shot down in front of his children, blowed up in front of his children. What you got right to be begging about and fussing about what your life is? Piss on us. We don't have any right to anything. Too many have died. Where have all the flowers gone? Anybody seen our old friend Martin? Long time ago. Long time gone. I think we ought to think a little more and get our minds off ourselves. You understand me? Ought to get our minds off ourselves. Some of you got your minds too much on yourself. You hearing what I'm saying? How many know that to be true? All right. Now, shift yourself as we close out by shifting some out and some in. And you watch and you understand. Bourgeois black bitch. She said, Rosemary, she said, I'm just such a miserable bitch and I'm so sorry. And if you'll just let me go back, she said, I'll work and I'll raise money. And all she's done has been on TV trying to tap this work, working with ours. Yeah, no more. I'm not taking no more fuckers like that. No more. Every one of them, Ron Crawford. I'm just sorry. I know I'm a goddamn fascist. I'm just a fascist, you understand? I just can't cope with it. I just can't cope with it. I got to do my thing. I just don't know what the fuck's the matter with me. Plus, he just felt he's too good to be here. I just can't do it. Just can't be gay. I said, got a black child. Well, that's shit. I don't really care about that. I just want to get out and get drunk. I said, okay. Let the fucker go. What do you do? Gets on TV and radio and lies. Mm-hmm. He had a slight accident. I don't know what hit him. A mosquito, I think, on Highway 4. Mm-hmm. and to perform. One will be left, and the other will be taken. And they all said, take it easy. You got to move slowly. He said, the mules of the Lord grind slowly. Because they got to grind slowly so they can't charge you with a conspiracy. Now think on that, honey. That was a parable from the Lord. The Lord thy God has spoken. Tell them all at one time and then know who in the hell did it. Move. Comes like a thief in the night. When you're drinking your beer and your 7-Up. Mixing a little gin with your tomato juice. And you go. I said, the Lord is a powerful God. Don't fuck with the Lord. And the Lord could disappear, and his works will go marching on. That's why I'm so faithful to you as a Savior and Father. People even tried to kill me here, and I still love them. Still care for them. But if someone were to kill me, it's just like that old turtle. His head, when you kill him and he's got his head on you, you're going to still have to deal with that fucking turtle head because he'll hold on. You can cut my head off and I'm just a little reverse. The body will get you. Somebody's hand will reach out and claw you. Take a piss, honey, on me. I praise the landscape crew, Marie Lance, supervisor. I couldn't. Best to get money from both. Get money everywhere I can. Get all they can and survive. They've given us more backing than most countries would. I think it's the wisest course they could take. Because I don't think the U.S. right now, I mean, they can go wait through, as the foreign minister said when he was leaning on my shoulder when he got back in the helicopter. As we were walking down the path, he said, we're tricking them at their own game. Well, let's hope it works. And certainly if it can hold out to the nuclear war, this will be a wise course, because if they would lean upon the Soviet Union too much and come out obviously against the USA, we'd have lots of trouble down here. Because that's a senile old man up there and crazy. USA is senile and got bombs, and they don't care where they drop them. Senior citizens work rice sorting. I'm headed by Ines Condion, Irene Edwards, Mary Griffith, Mary Martha Turner. Nina Herring gets a bit upset at times and is slow. Well, I like Nina Herring's way she participates in a socialist class. There are four different weapons. And they find it, and the police did it. It's obvious. We've got the whole picture. He'd be proud to be a part of it. With all of his anarchy, if he'd just listened to me, though, and stayed here, like I begged him, right on that step, I begged him to stay. What can they do to kill me? They did. Good old Chris, I loved him. But I knew what I was talking about. And keep it in mind, it isn't pleasant. Chris walked, that same tough Chris walked a block and a half, shot holes through him, and fell on a door trying to tell who killed him. It was the police that knew. Who else opens your trunks and goes under your seats and don't take your money off of you? Well, they know it was the police, because the car was taken immediately by the police away. And the police is named in the conspiracy against us. You remember reading that out in the magazine. Police, San Francisco. Remember when did the expose, what they did to Dennis Banks? San Francisco police, Los Angeles police, Customs, Interpol, the Nazi-run international police. And that's what's going to happen to you, man, back there. That's what would have happened. His body was riddled with holes. how we could have used him now. So be grateful and be quicker to express it. Back to your work, son.
Thank you.
I was at that moment. Now I'll tell you nothing but the truth. To one. In May 1962, Forbes Burnham, who in 1955 split from the People's Progressive Party, came to Washington. It was there that they changed the voting system from districts to proportional representation. He said, see article on Schlesinger's account on the U.S. role in this issue. The pressure from the United States on Britain and the intervention of the CIA is now well documented. When I first made the charges, I was accused of being a madman. Nowadays, Guyana is in serious economic crisis. According to Kagan, one of the contributing factors, he said, is the large military budget of this country. One of out of three Guyanese now is unemployed, and the situation among young people is even worse. Muggings in the cities during broad daylight is commonplace because of the poverty of the people, he added. This is greatly exaggerated. Mr. Jagan is guilty of great embellishment there. We know of no muggings in the daylight, and there is problems in the third world, but certainly it's black and brown together here in much greater degree, and no fear of concentration camps. We have our own land as a buffer, and we have our solidarity, a place where we can have cohesiveness, where we can pull ourselves together. Without being able to do that, we could not have survived. In the United States, we were doomed to defeat because there was no way we could rally around a common perimeter of protection and wage war, if necessary, against any that would want to invade, override us. Dr. Jagan went on that the inflation is eating away at the economic fabric of Guyana. Cost of living went up 7% during the 7 years that the PPP was in power. During the last 3 months of 1973, the cost of living has skyrocketed by 8%, said he. While the average wage is equivalent to about $2.50 a day, the cost of food is double and triple that of this country. That's not true. That's not true at all. Cost of food is much less reduced. So, Dr. Jagan, he doesn't mind politicking, ego politicking. We could get some real Marxist practitioners instead of those who want ego power, we'd be better off. All seem to want to be the Marxist leader in world power, politics, struggle. Very, very dangerous situation. Ego's got to be out of the way. We've got to want communism as an idealistic, pacifistic lifestyle and not care who leads. I'd be so happy if anyone would lead but me. I would think anyone was truly communist would not want to be the leader. He'd be glad to hold the coat for someone that was leading, if indeed that person could lead more capably than they. I am responsible to leadership because I found no one that can lead comparable to me, much less in a superior manner than I do. So I am ever burdened with this pressure of leadership. But it's not true that there's $2.50 a wage anymore. There's $2.50 a day wage. It's been under the present PNC, the vanguard of our party and government. He's elevated the minimum wage to $8.50 a day. So Dr. Jagan is again wrong. We have to content ourselves that we are the most advanced Marxist group that we've seen, the most advanced practicing communist group that we've seen. We'll be misunderstood. We'll be beguiled by some. Some will be beguiled, thinking that there are ideological alliances possible, that we have allies. But we are in advance of our time, and you have to face that. You can't face that. You're not a realist. At some point, you'll commit treason if you don't face reality. We are the most advanced, unfortunately, sorry to say, most advanced communist in practice, and the ego more in control here than any place, and in total control by this leader and the people around me
making much vaster effort to control their ego and their ambitions, their own personal ego fulfillments. And that's where Dr. Jagan could, all of them could come out here and learn and be greatly enhanced if they'd come and sit for a bit and learn of the process of catharsis and self-analysis and self-criticism. Dr. Jagan goes on, the growing crisis in the economics of Guyana, now an independent country, and the easing of world tension make Jagan more hopeful that he will once again be the prime minister of his country soon. That's 1974, so he's not a good prophet. But we're not condemning him for that. During his visit to Southern California, he was hopeful, very hopeful. But Jagan is not one to live in hope alone. He was planning, organizing, and making friends for the new Guyana, which he expects to come into being very soon. Well, good, Dr. Jagan, we hope you're right. A new Guyana where people will lose their ego, and you need to do it too. Mr. Jagan, you are very bad about that. Get ego out of the way and live in a simpler dwelling, more modest taste, Dr. Jagan. Don't live and thrive on McDonald hamburgers like you seem to have a necessity for. And a yearly trip to USA, he's got a little bit of it in his blood, too, so you're really not safe either way. Got a son being educated there, so that doesn't make him more Marxist than Dr. Burnham. Dr. Burnham has no children being educated in USA. In fact, Diana's taking a dim look on anybody being educated in USA because they find them coming back filled with all kinds of materialistic notions that won't work. Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon, my son. But they also, further than that, Mr. Narayan, who is the Minister of Transportation in the Cabinet, said he didn't want to expose his children to the racism anymore. And he's an East Indian in this government, the vanguard of our beloved government, the PNC. He bring his children home because he cannot stand racism and materialism in the United States. So, Mr. Jagan, we have to look at him very, very critically. We have to look at ourselves critically. That's the duty of life, to look at all matters critically. Constructively, of course. Dr. Jagan has lots of criticisms, but relatively few solutions. Actually, the present PNC on a firmer course of planning of the economy than his regime ever achieved. Mr. Jagan never attempted to distribute property, and there was no nationalization of any of the major industry, the means of production, the landed aristocracy, plantocracy, as he calls them. None of that was done under Jagan. That was all achieved under the PNC. Under Burnham, Dr. Reed, our good friend. So we have to look at all things analytical, even though Marxism has been expounded longer by Jagan, and he purportedly has always been pro-Soviet, and his wife also, and we have no reason to dispute that. His tastes are playing it safe. He has one child, I guess. Maybe he's being pragmatic again. Has one child being educated in the USA. Let's hope his child doesn't come out a victim of the system rather than a deliverer of it. I don't know what the status of his son's mental health is, but you cannot live in the United States without being poisoned somewhat and corrupted. His daughter, which I'm afraid says something, because I know the practice of all societies is to prefer the son over the daughter. So methinks that there is a bit of the bourgeois taste in Mr. Jagan, or he would have reversed the situation and put his son in Moscow and his daughter in the USA, being that they do put lesser importance on their daughters than their sons. We don't like to face that. That's a cruel injustice, that there would be such kind of discrimination between children, but it does happen. In all families except People's Temple. If you don't believe that, then you're being a dreamer again. Women are not given the proper respect. They should be given preferential treatment, compensatory treatment, but they're not. And if Dr. Jagan didn't place his son in USA, his son must be terribly bourgeois, because somebody had to exert some pressure to make the decision. If the son wanted to go there, then Dr. Jagan's not doing a good job of communizing his family. And so his son is in the U.S. getting a degree. Dr. Jagan chose U.S. to get his degree. That means there's a deep foot entrenchment, a part of his personality that's deeply entrenched in the U.S., probably consumerism, which makes him, to me, unsound, as to totally expect him to produce a Marxist-Leninist course. Burnham did not get his education there. His world travels were mostly in Europe, and his education was in Britain. He never felt accepted in British society and had a great disdain for the aristocracy that he saw there. I think Burnham is much more aware of the third world needs for unity and solidarity, black against white, black and brown aligning themselves against white. But I will always read both sides of any situation. As I read to you a bit of Dr. Jagan, the opposition leader of the PPP, which, as I said last evening, Foreign Minister Wills, who's been a very good friend apparently to us, made public statement that the PPP and the PNC have found a mutual agreement as to a foreign policy position. And that was reasonably encouraging, I suspect, that if both parties can agree on a foreign policy course, which was spelled out to mean closer alliance with Africa, third world nations, stronger economic determinism of socialism, governmental planning of the economy, distribution of the wealth and resources, and absolute course of non-alignment, which surprised me, because Dr. Jagan has been normally pro-Moscow. But apparent agreement was found between the PPP and the PNC for a totally non-aligned policy, which, with the madman syndrome in America, nuclear phobia, power, megalomania, lust for power, I suppose it's realistic to think a third world country is going to have to at least take a posture of non-alignment. One could expect no different. However, it is amazing to see that Dr. Jagan has come to that conclusion. He's usually taken guidelines fairly readily from the Soviet Union, and apparently the Soviet Union have advised him to take that kind of position. I cannot see him doing otherwise, in that he has depended upon funding for his party from Moscow. So Moscow must realize the danger of a thermonuclear collision course, and they're trying not to inflame the paranoia and the insecurity of a little child that's ruling the world, and that's what the U.S. represents, a little child, undeveloped, emotionally retarded. Capitalism's not in any way mature, and so I suppose that the mature socialist young man or woman, so symbolic in the Soviet Union, recognizes that they cannot expand the revolutionary sentiment of Marxism as much as they'd like into this sphere of which has formerly been U.S. sphere just by common practice, without doing it carefully, because the USA is talking war talk every day. They're talking about nuclear death preferred to being red. They'd rather be red than dead. They'd rather be dead than red, rather. Correct that. And back to that old talk, red, they'd rather be dead than red. Well, that's the kind of bullshit that can lead to a nuclear war. And so, apparently, most of the Marxist forces of Guyana have had to reckon that it's essential to take a non-aligned position politically, foreign policy-wise, in order to keep the U.S. from doing some going off trigger-happy and bringing nuclear doom on all the northern part of the world, most of the northern hemisphere. It'll happen, and that's one advantage. We didn't come down here, though, because this was a perfect political institution, I hope. I thought we understood. We came down here because this is a place we could get solidarity. Ready supply of food if we wanted to use our resources to get it, as we've proved the last three nights of hunting. We can eat. We could live post-nuclear. We can live when world economies crumble and fall and civilization goes into chaos. Frighteningly to say, in some ways, we would have a better advantage. We're not seeking that advantage. We want world order, peace. We'd like to see detente, but we're not dreamers. We know that nuclear war is inevitable as the rising of the sun, because scientists on both sides, socialists and capitalists, say that. It should have been reversed in the late 60s. By all means, the buildup of nuclear technology and the dispersing of nuclear reactors, now more stockpiling of bombs and more in the nuclear club, about 30 nations so far, it's getting uncontrollable. And so we believe that nuclear war is going to happen. And that's why we're here. That's one of the reasons we're here. Concentration camps will happen for blacks in the United States. That's another reason we're here. Not that the economy is a perfect situation, not that the leadership is perfect here, but there's little likelihood that black people will be put in concentration camps in a country that's multiracial, predominantly brown and black. No likelihood at all of concentration camps. No likelihood at all of genocidal weapons, ethnic weapons being used on minorities when this country is an alliance of minorities about equally, of equal strength. So there's no element of the population that's going to be done away with. And those are just the realistic factors why we came over here, not expecting to find utopia, but knowing certainly that we had one hell of a better chance for our children by coming to this vast acreage. We can look in our children's faces and see the relaxed countenances and their developmental skills growing every day. If we didn't have one more day, our children have been happier for moving this way. Much more happy. The traumas that we saw, bedwetting has been reduced in half and better. Even it would be reduced to zero if it hadn't been for crises, and we wish we could control crises. But you have to flex your muscles to show your enemy that you do not mean to be walked over. And that means a kind of a war psychosis that Che Guevara said has its adverse effects. It can slow down production. It did in Cuba. Diminish production over 30%. We don't intend to let that happen here. That's why we urge you out there. We want to see production reports from every crew in the garden areas, in every field of machines, mechanized parts, medical. We want to see production reports. We want to see goals and achievements. Medical program must be geared for production, just like cassava department. Everything must be an emphasis on production. And we must give our children peace, as I took a moment in the midst of a crisis today to tell you, don't, for God's sakes, force your children to walk and think that's some sign of advancement. You're being very, very stupid. Children need to crawl, to coordinate, to develop learning skills. And there is some good authority that they develop IQ. And you limit their development of IQ by making them walk. And I find out in the midst of a crisis, I have to take time to tell people that this is not a sense of accomplishment because you have your child walking at 9 months. You're being very stupid. You should be concerned about giving your child love, education, communications, but not persist to get the child to talk at a certain time or to walk at a certain time or to be potty trained by a certain month. This is all stupid and very fascistic. And I was shocked to find that that fascism was being carried over here. We want them to walk so they won't cause us so much trouble. That's what it really boils down to. And we reverse that abominable policy. We will allow our children, what days they have, to be normal as possible. At least little ones, don't inflict upon them the harshness of our own adult life too early. For Christ's sake, let them be children for a little while, even though that may cost our economy something. Because if you don't have a human value in the economy, you soon become something less than socialism. You develop authoritarianism for convenience. We're not here for our convenience. We've got to produce. Might be at some point we'll have to force our babies to walk because the matter of time and people to be reduced from the staff of the nursery so they can go to the fields. We're not under that pressure. At least I won't allow it to be at this moment. To force our children to risk learning retardation by someone's desire to say, my child walked earlier than yours, my child talked earlier than yours. I do think that it's a shock to me, and I want to find out a reasoning why this was not reported to me earlier or not consulted to me. I'm living in crisis every day and every night. In the middle of the morning, we were making phone patch, Sarah trying to find a channel at 4 o'clock this morning. We get up with the dawn, and we start on this goddamn radio again. All, you might say, 21, 23 hours some days. Certainly, 18 is nothing for us. 18 hours is a routine average day on the radio, defending the people here, defending the Greg Watkins, the new cases, and the Daryl Devers, and some unknowns that we're not mentioning. Hopefully, some of the information, like Mr. Oliver Strope, will feed back to some of these bastards, and it will have its deterrent effect. But usually people have to learn the hard way themselves and put us through a little discomfort while they're learning the hard way. We have to have a strong solidarity and an absolute cohesiveness and a will that we will give our life at a moment's notice for what we believe. Now that is pragmatism. I wish I could change that situation for you. I wish I could tell you that you have every day guaranteed till you're 65. Or till you're 192. If that cannot be, I'd be a liar to tell you otherwise. And I have been able to say this, that those are prepared to lay down their lives for what they believe, win more battles than those who show any flinching in the time of pressure. You must show a will, a courage, a fortitude that when the sons of bitches want to rave on you and just besiege you, that say, hey man, you've gone far enough. Hey bastard, hey bitch, you have pursued as far as we're going to allow you to move. This is the line. That's called confrontation politics, brinkmanship politics. But they're playing the game. We cannot back up. We must keep this sovereignty here of our land, our freedom of community. That must not be invaded. We'll make all sorts of compromises of working with people, assisting the general economy, but we will not be encroached upon. We will not have our liberty taken away. We'll not have our medical doctors removed. We'll not be put under bureaucratic nonsense that they have the pharmacist a year or the doctor a year study outside of this community. No, we will not tolerate our school being disrupted. You say, is that new? No. I'm talking about past battles. We won the school battle. They were going to have us integrated in their school system by mid-September. Well, we certainly find ourselves in approaching mid-January, and we are independent with absolute government assurances that our schools will remain totally independent. Medical, we're going to move our people in months ago. Put them under the stamp of bureaucracy and get their little credentials in the manner that they've been prescribed in the past. But we said no, and our doctor's still functioning, performed a beautiful surgery this week, complicated and perfected. And our nurses and our people are getting licensed little by little. Our pharmacist has not been forced to take his 690 hours yet. So we have to take that kind of a stance, child, that nobody's going to shove us around. We'll give to show our willingness to work together. We will produce to feed others, to give medication to other children, to take in children. There's one down the river that needs a home right now. We will reach out and expand our horizons to care, but we will not be pushed over. And that is a commitment that no Marxist ever attained until we came along. A willingness to drop your life in a moment for what you believe. Now, some of you don't even come to terms with that, but some of us do come to terms with it, and we live that way every day, and we don't expect tomorrow, but we have more confidence that tomorrow will come because of that will. A tomorrow that will be brighter for our children. A tomorrow that will be more safe for our children here, in which we will have more guarantees of life, liberty, and the acquisition of happiness. Because the leader and a few around him, perhaps, are willing to die for what they believe, willing to be tortured for what they believe, willing to be incarcerated for what they believe. There's nothing they're not willing to endure for what they believe. But liberty, the loss of liberty, will not be permitted. No more loss of liberty. Not one of our people taken away. It's unnegotiable. I don't care if it's a handicapped person or a little child, non-productive. In their terms, as some would argue, and they have argued, why do you fuss over a child? Why do you make such a fuss over a child? What do they have to do with your economy? That shows the lack of socialist sensitivity on the part of people in this country and total lack in America. We found no one in America could understand my stand for Dana Trust. No one could understand it. They could understand my stand for my own son, but they couldn't understand my stand for Dana Trust. So what does she mean to you? Not a socialist that could come to terms with that. Well, piss on them. We don't care whether any socialist understands it or not. We know it's right. You either look after all your family, or you someplace along the line won't be able to look after any of your family. It's all for one, one for all. That's my philosophy. That's the way I'll die, if necessary, by that philosophy. Because I don't negotiate my children, and all of you are my children. All of you are members of my family, and you are non-negotiable to the enemy. Unless you choose to go to Babylon to die, or to concentration camps back in America, racial genocide and nuclear war, that's your privilege. But if you choose my protection, then I will give that protection. If necessary, you'll have to cross my wounded and lacerated body, and certainly easily dying body, to get to you, because I'm a buffer between you and your enemies. Enough for news and commentary and review of principle for the time being. Thank you. The General Assembly on Disarmament, opening at the end of May, informed sources said on Wednesday night. They said Comrade Brezhnev's attendance was more than likely if the preceding strategic arms limitation talks with the U.S. went at all well and brought agreement of any degree between the superpowers within sight. The Soviet leader was understood to have informed General Secretary General Kurt Waldheim of the United Nations in Moscow last September of his wish to visit the UN. Mr. Lazar Mojosov of Yugoslavia, president of the current assembly of the United Nations, will preside over the special session, the first of its kind. Vostra's victory embarrasses the world. Prime Minister John Vostra, dictator of the apartheid regime of South Africa, thumping general election victory follows the traditional pattern of white politics in South Africa, according to the Guyana Chronicle of Thursday yesterday, and will do nothing Thursday last. No. Tuesday. Wait, you can't have a Tuesday's paper. Whatever. Recent Guyana Chronicle. It's Friday, December 9, I guess. Here we got two sections mixed up. Prime Minister Vorster's massive victory in the white South African elections, predictable as it was, only confirms black Africans and third world nations' fears that the whites do not even want to bring about equality for blacks in that country at all. Derek Ingram, Gemini News Service Managing Editor, who went to South Africa to observe the elections, reports that the result can only embarrass the world, and particularly the West, if its commitment to human rights is sincere. Southern Africa, the white politics of Southern Africa will do nothing,
according to the Gemini News report, to improve his country's relations with most of the world. Vorster is smug in his independent victory. As happened in Rhodesia in the early 60s, the political scene in South Africa has further polarized, with a huge majority supporting the right-wing, white racist nationalist party, a Nazi party, and a tiny liberal opposition and nothing else of any consequence at all. The left, the communist, socialists have all been outlawed, banned, and crushed. Only too predictably, South Africans are moving into their lager, convinced that they can brush aside world opinion. The mood was set by dictator Vorster in his speech before polling began, when he said, "The world must know that if we are forced, we will have no option but to fight, not only for ourselves, but for the free world, that is, the free racist world, he should say, because we must protect this southern tip of Africa, this bastion of white civilization, this lifeline of Europe. The hope of any really effective opposition to the nationalist fascist government has now been crushed. Leader Colin England, Mrs. Helen Suttsman, and their 17 progressive federal party seats can hope to do little more than harass the steamroller of the Vorster government, while the real opposition, the millions of black Africans who are not allowed to vote or hold office, continue to have no say in the affairs of Parliament. The situation will bring no joy to Washington. One of the features of the nationalist campaign was its anti-Americanism, particularly anti-Carterism. Even Eglin climbed on the wagon and criticized U.S. new tough policy under Carter against apartheid, though Mrs. Suttsman kept her distance on that one. In black African and most third world nations, the results will be seen as confirming their worst fears that South African whites just do not ever want to bring about a situation of equality or justice with their black population. It will stiffen their opposition to South Africa in the United Nations, the Organization of African Unity, and all the world forums, and increase the calls for total economic boycott by all third world peoples, such as Guyana has already called for. The results produce an increasingly embarrassing situation for the West, which is always in danger of lagging in the support for the third world, while the Eastern Bloc of communists and socialists lines up on that side of liberation. The pressures of history are heretofore, therefore, bound to drive the U.S. and the rest of the West into an increasingly hostile situation vis-a-vis South Africa. In the short term, the West will be hoping that Vorster, having put himself in such an impregnable position, will at least feel able to help deliver Rhodesia and Namibia into African rule. In recent weeks, there has been little evidence that Vorster was putting much pressure on Ian Smith for a settlement, or that he was moving much on Namibia either. He's always been arguing, it's interesting how Vorster will sell out the white regimes to the north of him to gain influence with the United States and more economic aid. The United States could change this immediately if the transnationals and multinationals would only just cut off his water, but no, they won't do that, even though Carter makes these pretensions of being against the apartheid regime and for human rights. Vorster has always argued that to be seen to be letting down the Europeans in Rhodesia was difficult for him electorally. Now he might feel differently. Indeed, no reason why he decided to go to the polls much earlier than necessary may have been so that he could put himself in a stronger position domestically in order to take the unpopular step of promoting black rule in the two neighboring countries, to sell them out, the white elements out, so that he would have a more heavily guarded position for his own white racist apartheid system. This would go some way towards pacifying Washington and the West. Domestically, it would relieve Vorster of some external anxieties and allow him to concentrate more on the affairs of South Africa itself. There's plenty for him to worry about here. The Nationalist Party fought the election on a platform of successful achievement. Vorster said at one point in the campaign, "Looking at the history of our achievements, I say we have no reason to have a guilty conscience about anything. Nowhere in the world have 4 million people that are white done so much for 20 million black." You must have nearly vomited on that statement. The country, however, is not in good shape. One of the most worrying current aspects is that following the Soweto rioting, black education has collapsed entirely.
all black children are now out of school. Tens of thousands of children are not at school, and teachers have resigned. The result is that children right down to primary levels are roaming the streets and have been doing so for many, many months. Dynamite. It must be a situation of potential dynamite. Yet, as the Rand Daily Mail pointed out, the government went into the election with no policy whatsoever to help the urban blacks. Boyster is ever the highly skillful politician, and his decision to call an election coming at a time when the opposition had only recently fragmented was perfectly timed for his fascist party. However it may be that the opposition is now more healthily disposed. When the old United Party, for so long led by the ineffectual Sir D. Villiers Graaf, at last broke up, the Progressive Federal Party became the main opposition. The Progressives had, in fact, for long been the more effective opposition, even when Mrs. Suzman was their only member of Parliament at that time. But the new lineup has only recently taken shape, and the fascist Boyster cunningly struck before it had enough time to develop. The Progressives may now grow from their new base, but the reality is that they have only one more seat than they did in the last Parliament. While the number of nationalists or fascists is greater than ever, it will be a long haul for them and a great embarrassment to the West. It is not that Carter is so committed to human rights, but the rest of the world are incensed by the Boyster apartheid regime, and thus it forces the United States to strongly come out, at least in verbal ways, against the terrible racist South African government regime. Continue with the reading of the news in the Guyana Chronicle of Monday last. I'm trying to find here the opposition back a positive measure here. This is a very interesting situation. I don't see where that article began. I'm glad to always see PPP and PNC working together, because that will help to assure destabilization. Washington. The Senate passed a bill making it illegal for U.S. corporations to bribe foreign officials in setting a fine of up to $1 million for each violation. Present law does not prohibit foreign bribes. The bill was introduced for about 400 major American firms because they reported making millions of dollars in overseas bribes over the past few years. No one can speculate as to how well the law will be enforced. Of course not. Of course not. Because after all, the United States is a corporate monopoly capitalist regime. That's why all groups such as ours, even however small in number, are being broken down, because monopoly capitalism has to be the big gangster. It will not allow anyone to exercise any strength at all. And all groups that have solidarity, loyalty around anything other than the corporate leadership, the maniacal multinationals, are going to be wiped out by the confederation of government and the press, which is a myth of free press. The adversary press is a myth. There is no such thing as an adversary press in the United States. There's a government media alliance, and we see it every blessed day as we go along.